That cost South a minute.
Long ball.
Pass interference.
So we've got West with a pass interference.
On Tyler Williams. And you know, Sandy, he was almost triple covered.
Yeah, he threw into coverage. The defender didn't need to be quite as aggressive as he was. It'll be an automatic first down, 10-yard penalty or
4-3-2-1. That's the end of the third quarter. Clock running.
Happens pretty fast.
Yeah. 42-0. Waukesha West.
Waukesha West is leading Waukesha South. South has had the ball for a good portion of this quarter. With running clock, it turns out you can possess the ball for a whole quarter without a great deal of difficulty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they're going to go into this fourth quarter. They're going to have the ball at West's 40-yard line.
44-yard line.
And they have some wind in their sails, so, you know, maybe they'll come out of this with a score.
Once again, they've been moving the ball.
Yeah. And this time it's a little more variety. They've been running the ball, making West be a little bit more honest. I think that's going to help them score. And I think I'm right there with the coach. Let's just get a touchdown. Let's just prove to our kids that we can play with these other guys. Interestingly, West has not done wholesale substitution.
No, they haven't.
No, their team on the field is pretty much the starters, pretty much unchanged. So I expect the fourth quarter will be different.
It looks like it now.
I think it is. I think we're seeing a bunch of clean uniforms out here now in the fourth quarter. Bunch of numbers I haven't seen before.
Right.
But, you know, they waited. We have motion right to left. Rolling left, Jimenez throwing. Ooh, don't overthrow. He overthrew his receiver who was running with him. I made that comment only because it's you overthrow a receiver in that neck of the woods and you might get an interception.
Well, you know, Sandy, it's not a difficult thing. You're a right-handed quarterback. You're rolling to the left, and you're throwing across your
body.
Back into the middle of the field. It takes some skill.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I've seen pro quarterbacks who can't get it done. But he seems to be able to do it.
He's very fluid. Jimenez is a very, very fluid athlete. I suspect he's a three-sport athlete just from the way he moves. Whoa, that was quick. Bubble screen. Unfortunately, that didn't pan out. It was a bubble screen left. The receiver ran right into a linebacker.
Yeah.
That was a boom boom play. Get the ball, run into a linebacker.
You know, Sandy, those kinds of plays, they're tough plays, tough to block. And dangerous pass.
The quarterback had about a nanosecond to throw that. It was the tackle running in on him was unblocked, and maybe that was intentional to create the space for that bubble. But
you got to be careful that it doesn't become a lateral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the jet sweep. That didn't happen. Good ball.
Oh, nice try.
Good try.
Yeah. On both sides, yeah. Quarterback,
yeah.
Receiver. Quarterback, receiver, and the defensive back.
Yeah, yeah.
Timeout, West. You know, maybe now they'll
the substitutions.
Yeah.
I think they're over there. I think these are substitutes. I think they're probably trying to gather them together. Not sure what do we have. We have fourth down and 10 to go. I'm not sure what they're concerned about in this play, but maybe it's trying to teach them up about how to cover what's going to be a fly pattern left or right.
Well, Sandy, I have to tell you, It's still exciting.
Well, I suppose it's a sort of the coaching spirit in me, but I am still real interested in seeing South put it together here, put together a good drive, give the kids something good to think about. That's a nice pass. Oh!
Pass interference. Again.
Well, you know why? The problem there is the defensive back didn't turn to look at the ball. If he had turned and been playing the ball instead,
it's probably roughing the passer.
Well, he ran right under the receiver.
Well, there are two flags.
Oh, they're roughing the passer too.
No, I don't know if it's roughing the passer. I thought it might be. I didn't see a flag.
Was it thrown after the pass? I think two refs called the same penalty.
Yeah.
Now we've got the ball at the 26-yard line of West, right at the left hash mark. It's 9 minutes to go.
Sandy Bratz and pretzels half price.
Ooh.
Oh, nice move.
Nice move. Yeah.
He's doing it.
Oh, nice ball. He didn't come down in bounds. Through to Flowers. Flowers is number one, correct?
Yes. Well, so high school, you only need 1 foot in.
Yeah, only 1 foot in, but I think he didn't get the one in.
Yeah,
but that was a really nice ball and a nice catch,
great,
too.
Great movement by the quarterback, right?
Yeah, the quarterback finessed.
He didn't panic, right? The guy was staring it right on him. Well, once again, Sandy, nobody's left the stadium.
Yeah. Including us. So we got same place, same situation, second and 10. We've got a flag on the play already, thrown after
behind
the
him.
Incomplete pass. I think it was a defensive, either is. The way the timing of it suggested to me there's a defensive offsides, but well, it isn't. It's going to be an illegal shift. Okay. So it's going to be a 5-yard penalty.
Well, you know, Sandy, with all the motion that South is using. No, I mean the motion that they do on offense. Yeah.
Yeah.
That they do on offense. You're kind of surprised they're not getting more motion penalties.
I think in this case what they had is two guys in motion at
the same time, right.
We have Flowers out wide right as a single. We got Trips left. Flowers out wide right. I'm pretty confident they want one-on-one coverage to him. My bet is we'll see a pass to Flowers. He has one-on-one coverage. We have a rolling right pass to Flowers.
You called it right, Sandy.
There we go.
Oh, great move.
Great move. Flowers caught the ball at the 15-yard line, out at the 14-yard line.
Yeah, first and 10. You know, Sandy, this is what you've been talking about and others.
Yeah, this is where they were when they threw that unfortunate interception. Now I want them to go down and score. You know, they had – I think there could be three touchdowns on the board for South in a different world if a woulda, coulda, shoulda game could have been had.
Yeah, but they're an entertaining team.
Well, they are entertaining. If they score the 3, West doesn't score the 42. We end up with a game that's
tight.
Tight, yeah. not so widely one-sided as this.
Well, let's get them in the end zone.
Let's get them in the end zone this time. We've got them rolling left. Dude, don't throw it to. Oh, touchdown. Yeah, touchdown.
What a throw.
Well, we got it.
What a
so
throw.
I have to say, I should be neutral, but I'm very happy for Waukesha South. Jimenez threw a beautiful leading pass into the left corner of the end zone, and it was
caught over the shoulder.
Not Flowers. It was.
I know. I'm trying to see who it was. It's probably the guy who's.
The other wideout. The left. He was the left wideout in that play.
You know, Sandy, that was a great throw.
Great throw.
It was right on the money.
Right on the money. He threw it where no one else could catch it, and
These guys late coming on the field.
They do want to have 11 on the field. That's. And we got 7 points.
All right. You know, Sandy, if you're watching this, the quarterback is thrown, Jimenez, he's probably thrown for over 200 yards.
He's throwing, like you said, 80% of the plays have been passes, so at least 80%. And I'm really happy to see them put some points on the board. 6:03 on the 6 minutes and 3 seconds left in the game. I think number 9 scored it. Who's number 9?
Number 9 is Evans Stott.
Yep. He scored the touchdown.
All right.
Give him credit.
Yeah, he made a great defensive play.
No, off the he was the one that caught it in the corner
of the
end
zone. Earlier, he made some great defensive plays.
Yeah.
So
he's a rangy kid. He looks like he's
he is a basketball player.
Yeah,
as well, probably he's all legs and arms.
Yeah, so that was a good play. So this is what South had in them. Today it didn't surface until too late in the game, but.
Number 27 is on the field. They got the little bit
West. Yeah,
the smallest guy in the stadium is on the field. Yeah. I know his heart is pumping. And it's great to get those kids a chance. Listen to me, he's got the JV teams out here.
Yeah. Well, that's right. In fact, the jersey, the pants are different, so we got different unis a little bit. Good high kickoff.
A
lot of air under that for a
hard run.
Well, good tackle. Very good tackle. Number 8. Justin Geezy. Good tackle.
Yeah,
we've called his name a couple of times.
He's
a tough defender.
Yeah, he's a pretty good player.
Okay, South. We've got an opportunity with a running clock, but still, if you stuff these guys, you have a chance at another run at this. So let's give yourselves a break.
Well, you got to, and you got to figure too. I was looking to see if South had kind of cleaned the bench. Some kids out there, they haven't had.
I think everyone at South has played just about.
Yeah. That's first down.
Number 15 got about a 14-yard gain. Number 15,
That's your guy.
Mike is my guy. Teddy Lukey, 5'9". So not so very big.
Nice tackle.
Nice tackle we got.
That's Emmanuel Carter.
So he
number 22.
Came up fast from cornerback. That was a good play.
Yeah, great tackle.
He closed on him very quickly.
Here comes.
We got 4 minutes and 25 seconds.
Benjamin Pizarro comes into.
Clock running.
Comes into the game, and he replaces Justin Geezy.
Second.
So he's
second and 8.
He's getting all the kids in.
Second and 8. We got a pass. Whoop. Pass completed. It's going to be a first down. First down at the 46-yard line of Waukesha West. 42-7 is the score. We've got 3 minutes and 50 seconds left in the fourth quarter running time.
And Yovani Piera comes in.
Waukesha West is off tackle. Number 15 again. Oh, he got outside. He's got outside.
He's tackled out at
he got outside and made a long run. He's out at the 15-yard line of Waukesha South.
Run down by Emmanuel Carter.
Taken out of bounds by 22, Emmanuel Carter. Good for a Wolverine first down.
Well, we've got 3 minutes left.
Hey, Sandy, I think when are you and I going to go in there? I think they
have very much. It's about time, huh? Wow. Is there an ambulance here? Okay, Kevin, there we go. They stuffed that
nice
play.
Tackle.
That was an off-right tackle play. That was nothing there for him. Gain about half a yard.
Tackle by Anthony Dzinski. You know, Sandy, all in all, it's an entertaining game.
Yeah, 2.5 minutes left. Ball at the 18-yard line of,
a lot of scoring.
Waukesha South. 2nd and 9. Same play, same result. Off tackle right. Tackle for essentially no gain. No gain. So we got 3rd and 9.
2 minutes
coming
and
down
10
to
seconds
2 minutes.
Left.
2 minutes. Well, there's probably a couple of more plays left.
51 has just now gotten into the game for South. We don't have his name, so
we're down. We're down on the roster to the point where we don't have all the numbers. We don't have names for all the numbers.
Yeah, but it's a big deal for
off tackle. And we got him.
That's a good tackle.
So now it's 4th down. 4th down and about 6 yards.
That's a good tackle by Aiden. Aiden.
4th and 6 at the, we're at about the 15-yard line of Waukesha South. West has the ball. The Wolverines have the ball. 4th down.
1 minute and 10 seconds.
Whoop! That play was muffed.
he got it there, Sandy. It took a while. I think he got the first down.
Didn't get the first down.
Oh, he did.
I don't think so. He's short of the first down.
That turned the ball over.
We
got all right.
53 seconds. We're gonna get just a couple of plays, maybe one play off. Oh, they did give him the first down. So. West did get the first down. They're at the 9-yard line. Off left.
Here we got a.
We have a holding. I think we have a holding on the offense. I think this is not going to be a touchdown.
You know.
It's a penalty on the offense.
You know, it's got to be a tough thing. He scored. He's all excited.
Yeah.
And you get up off the ground and.
Oops. Not holding, it's an illegal formation, but we've got it's called back. So we've got 5-yard penalty.
10 seconds.
One more play. Maybe one more play. I think we're not going to get another play.
No, I don't think you're going to get that off.
I think the game is going to end at 42-7. I was pleased to see Waukesha South come through with a nice long series.
Absolutely. You know, Sandy, the great thing about all of this is after the game, the sportsmanship, right?
Yep.
Guys get a chance.
Friday Night Lights. It's always fun.
Well, Sandy, it was a ball. It was a blast.
Yep.
I think we'll stay in our lanes.
I think we'll stick to our day jobs.
and thank all of you who took the time out to listen.
Yeah.
Thank you back at the studio. I guess we're going to close it out now. Is that right?
That's right. Thanks for covering the game, you guys. We're going back to normal programming now. Good night, Earl.
Right.
Good night, Sandy.
Good night. Good night.
Yep.
Thank you.
$350 billion we're talking about here.
Wow. That's enormous. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Matthew Gardner. He's a senior fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. If you want to check out their website, itep.org. Anything going in front of the Supreme Court right now, it's tainted with all kinds of billionaire money and allegations of, you know, lobbying and payoffs. Anything in this any inconveniences for our 9 in the robes?
Well, there is for at least 2 of them. Roberts and Alito, it turns out, each have substantial stock holdings in companies that would benefit from a repeal of this transition tax to the tunes of billions of dollars. So, you know, their share of it wouldn't be gigantic, but it's clearly, it's as clear a conflict of interest as you'll ever see. I mean, if there was a Chief Justice Microsoft, it might be a little bit clearer, but you know, it's not at all hard to see the impropriety of this. And yeah, so this is coming at a time, as I said before, when the perceived legitimacy of the Supreme Court is at an all-time low. This flood of ethical lapses and scandals and just a complete lack of concern for public perception that we've seen from the court the last year or so, this could make it a lot worse. So yeah, it's even absent this, it's a case that could really blow a hole in our federal budget. But the notion that Supreme Court justices might be making such a decision in a way that benefits themselves personally, I think could be catastrophic for the legitimacy of the institution.
I agree. But, you know, a lot of what's been going on there has been just mind-boggling. You know, Alito and his bizarre defense in the newspaper, and you know, Thomas, all of the long line of payoffs that... Wow, it's not good. It's not good. So when does this get heard? When do is there a calendar date? Do we have an idea of when so we can start preparing?
Well, one thing we know about Supreme Court justices is that they do what they want when they want to. But the thought is that we'll have a decision before the end of the year, November maybe.
Yeah.
Right now, a lot of organizations, anti-tax organizations, are submitting their amicus briefs. You know, their friend of the court briefs where they explain their rationale for why we shouldn't have a tax system anymore. But, you know, they're going to be looking at that stuff over the next few weeks, and I think hearing it sometime starting in October. So we should know a lot of things by the end of the year.
Well, we'll see how that goes, and I expect you'll come back and share with us what happens at the hearing and possibly if a decision and when a decision, what that's going to mean and all of that. But, Matthew, I appreciate you taking a little time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good stuff, Matthew Gardner. Make sure you check out their website, itep.org. He's a senior fellow there at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I think about a friend who was a congressman years ago. And one of the things he told me, you know, look, no one's ever bought my vote, but I got to raise money. So you get my ear 15 minutes at a time. And he goes, look, the people who are writing the checks, they all have similar wants and needs. It's all well coordinated. And this is back, you know, this is back 15 years ago. It's gotten so much worse. And this is why I'm a supporter of publicly funded elections. I think you get X amount of dollars to run an election. If you can get, you know, people to come in and volunteer time, that's great. I'm in favor of, you know, small, you know, matching donations from individuals. We should be banning corporate money. We should be banning PACs and super PACs and all of that stuff. because the big moneyed interests get what they want all the time. And this tax thing could be huge. I mean, you know, as Matthew was talking, my mind goes to, so let me get this straight. Because if you remember, you know, you had all these big companies hoarding money overseas, mostly in the Caymans or in Ireland or places that had no, they were tax havens. And you had this one-time repatriation fee. And, you know, they were saying, oh, look how much money we brought in. Now this could potentially undo all of that. And do you think that they kind of knew that this is the direction that they were going to go? Because I don't believe the moneyed interests do anything haphazardly. I don't believe the right does anything without really gaming it out. This is the one thing I give them credit for. They built an incredibly powerful state policy network. They got think tanks in every state. They've got, you know, giant, capacity for intellectual damage. They have the ability to game out horrible stuff for working people, and they've been very successful. And this tax thing is still part of it. And I go back to what George Carlin said years and years ago. He said, look, you know, the rich, you know, take all the money, pay none of the taxes. The working class, the middle class pays all of the taxes, does all the work. And the poor are there to scare the middle class to showing up to the crummier and crummier jobs. There has never been a more succinct, accurate statement, in my view, than that one. And now they're going to destroy our ability to make investments, to take care of people. I mean, it's maddening when you stop and think about it, the direction we're going as a country, because of the enormous wealth that's being accumulated. And it's only going to get worse. Trust me, this is only going to get worse. As technology comes online, as we start losing more and more jobs, I was just reading an article that FedEx is looking at doing away with their dock workers because they've got AI who can load and unload the trucks. They've got robotics who can come in and do all the work that right now people are doing. And eventually there's going to be a point where working people have no work. And this is, I keep saying, you know, our politicians are so far behind the curve. And that's on purpose. Republicans have gummed the system up for so long. I mean, this is not new. You know, how many, during the Obama years, how many times did we have, you know, near shutdowns and chaos? I mean, it was like a bad season of 24. You know, every time you turn around, there's a ticking bomb. You know, society's on the brink of being eviscerated by crazy Republicans who want to hold the country hostage for more cuts so that they could take food out of the mouths of children to give rich people tax breaks. That is the reality of the Republican Party. Literally stealing food out of the mouths of children so that we can give more tax breaks to the very wealthy. And this... this thing that the ITEP put out is just remarkable. 77% our billionaire class got richer because of the Trump tax scheme. How much wealthier did you get? Remember that tax cut that you were supposed to get? Did you get it? The answer is no. And because of the Trump tax scheme, our wealth class added another $2.2 trillion in wealth. And that's on top of the $3.9 trillion in wealth that they added because of the pandemic. You seeing a pattern here? You're getting robbed. You're getting ripped off every day. And then we're being told the people who are trying to fight back, those workers who are on strike, those Teamsters who are going to go on strike, the restaurant workers in you know, Las Vegas who are about to go on strike, they're the problem. They're not the problem. They're the solution. And again, I go back to what Sean Fain said where I started today. I go back to that comment that he made of, look, we've got to take on corporate greed. He said, we're fed up with corporate greed. We're fed up with corporate excess. We're fed up with breaking our bodies for companies that take more and more and give less and less. Our anger is righteous, our struggle is just. He's spot on accurate. And we had better wake up to that soon, because technology is coming fast. This is coming. There's no, hey, we can slow, it's coming. And we're behind. So all of this chaos, all of these shutdowns, all of the impeachment inquiry, all this craziness is nothing more than stall tactics for us to get ahead of the curve. Because once we're behind, we never catch up. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1789. That was the day that the United States Congress officially created the United States Army. Not everyone agreed that the U.S. should have a standing army. 2 years earlier, at the meeting that drafted the U.S. Constitution, James Madison warned against a permanent federal army. He told those at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, quote, "A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty." Since Madison was a strong proponent of a centralized federal government, his caution about the army was noteworthy. Perhaps these warnings is why it took Congress until the last day of their session to finally approve the measure. In fact, President George Washington had to write Congress not once, but twice to get them to act on the issue. Once it was approved, the first standing army had about 800 members. By comparison, in 2015, the army had just under 500,000 active duty soldiers. To supplement the small army, Congress also made a provision for the president to call up troops from state militias. The stated purpose for such call-ups was, quote, "protecting the inhabitants of the frontiers of the United States from hostile incursions of the Indians." While in federal service, the state militias were supposed to receive, quote, "the same as the pay and substance as the regular army." One time, various state militias were used for the forced removal of the Cherokee people from the southeast on the Trail of Tears in the 1830s. State militias were also deployed to break up labor strikes, such as the case in the Homestead Strike in Pennsylvania in 1892. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
When megalomaniac multi-billionaire barons of industry suddenly announce that they are boundless geniuses who must remake society, government, and nature, perk up and pay attention. Their grand schemes of social engineering almost always go badly for us non-billionaires. Having spent their careers in the top-down, self-aggrandizing, exploitative corporate culture, they invariably turn to techno-solutions and AI computer models, ignoring such bothersome factors as human dynamics. So look out, for here comes a gaggle of high-tech gabillionaires from Silicon Valley planning to fix America's cities by building an urban utopia from scratch. They've chosen Solano County, northeast of San Francisco, for their startup city, promoting it as a hybrid of technotopia and European urbanity, free from the gritty realities of, you know, real cities. Their plan, however, did not include informing the people currently living there about their scheme. Instead, they dispatched secret armies of lawyers and developers to snap up the area's rich farmland, preparing to surprise the locals by converting their land, community, and culture into the gabillionaires' experiment in new urbanism. One of the moneyed schemers declared that, quote, "the idea is simple. Found new cities, free from old bureaucratic and legal structures, and explore bold new visions of how government should work." But that's not simple. It's simplistic. Also, wholly anti-democratic and un-American. But it's in keeping with the egomaniacal ejaculations of other self-indulgent richies who want to build cities that float on oceans, that orbit in space, or that are built on Mars. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's send all of them there now. Meanwhile, what if more of our billionaires invested their money in funding real solutions to real problems in the real cities America already has?
Welcome Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, California Senator Dianne Feinstein passed today. And, now it puts Gavin Newsom in an interesting spot. Which, who does he appoint? Which direction does he go? Because there's a primary challenge going on. There are a bunch of Democrats running to fill her seat. We'll see what takes us. Anyway, we're here to share some thoughts on maybe Bob's got some stories about Senator Feinstein. That's why I've asked my good friend Bob Nay, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So, did you know the senator?
Yes, served with her in the sense that she was in the Senate, I was in the House, but she was there a long time, as Senator Biden was, and McConnell. But I wasn't a social dinner guest, but I talked to her through on occasion. I think the really neat thing about Senator Feinstein was the fact that, she was the first female chair of two big committees, which is Intel and also chair of rules. And the Intel is the one I'd stress, too, because where I think internally, at least in the Senate, she had the most respect was the fact that she wasn't known to tinker politically with Intel. If you're on the Intel committee and, people start to perceive, they've got some political agenda or something, then, it causes a lot of constraint, and anger each side. But I think Feinstein did a good job on sharing it. It's sad how, how things are. It's sad how she's remembered how she left, but she should be remembered for the a lot of things that she did.
Yeah. What do you think? Which direction do you think Newsom goes?
Well, he put himself into a box in the sense of, the quote that he committed that he was going to appoint an African-American woman. Now, that's not a box where you say, well, why are you saying that? But also that appointment would be a card holder, a placeholder. And that's a problem, because then he has to find somebody who said publicly, yes, I'm not running, in one way, though, it solves a problem for him because he doesn't have to go in between several primary candidates. So he has to go outside the people in the primary, I would assume.
Well, we'll see where that goes, because the race between Schiff and Porter, I'm told, is very close.
Yes, I think so.
I'm pulling for Katie Porter, but I like Adam Schiff, but I'm pulling for Katie Porter.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get your thoughts on RFK Jr. launching an independent bid. Does this hurt more? Does this hurt Biden or Trump more?
I think it hurts Biden more. I do. Not that RFK is a player within the Democratic circles. We all know that. In fact, it's kind of funny, Rick. You have friends who, they don't follow politics, but they follow names or whatever. And when this first started, I had friends of mine that said, RFK is going to be, this is going to be a very divisive primary with Biden. And I'm like, no.
No.
They said, why not? I said, because RFK.
Because he's a kook.
I'm going to be politer. RFK is different. And he has attacked me. He's got a conspiracy. I'm part of one of his conspiracy theories.
Oh, do tell.
If you Google. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I was shopping one night. And what's the guy that did the Shawshank Redemption? Tim Robbins.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm shopping one night in a store in Ohio, and I get this phone call, and my friend's like in this panic. Tim Robbins is on TV attacking you. On, I think it was the Bill Maher show. He's attacking you. I'm like, okay. I'm out of office by this time. In fact, I'm doing your show, at that time. And I said, for what? And he said, conspiracy theory, you rigged the Bush election. I said, if I rigged the Bush election, there's two things. One, I wouldn't have went into the Bush housing program known as prison. Or two, I would have really a wonderful Swiss bank account, of which I have neither of those. RFK came up with a theory that I had gotten Diebold, and through the Help America Vote Act, he put aside, Steny Hoyer and Ted Kennedy, his uncle, was sponsors of the bill, he put that aside. Yet he came up with the whole conspiracy theory that I had fixed the election for Bush in 2004.
Wow. Yeah, it's easy. It's easy to put Teddy Kennedy away.
But I think that if anything, this election, if it's Trump and Biden, then it becomes so tight that look, anybody can make a difference. But then again, there are people that can make the difference against Trump too. You know.
Yeah, because I'm not sure. I'm not sure how RFK breaks. I'll be honest with you. He's on all the kook side of things that some people on the right would be attracted to.
Well, that's true.
Yes, I wanted to get your thought because my mind is in this weird spot because he's really on the kook train that could attract some of those people who just don't like the Trump stuff.
True.
But, yeah, we'll see.
Thought about that. You're right. He could attract a little bit from maybe each side. I don't think he's a kingmaker.
No.
As if Manchin were in this or something. But yes, he can do a little damage here and a little damage there.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the impeachment. It was quite nothing. I mean, when your three witnesses say, well, there's nothing, kind of makes you go, anything?
Well, yeah, this is one I kind of called wrong in the sense, and it'll develop, the American public are fluid, but when this all started, I had messaged a couple of people I know on the Republican side in D.C. in the House, and I just said this is, because they said, what do you think? I said, dumb political move, dumb. You're going to take yourselves off target. You don't know what you've got yet to, launch this. And then I read releases of the moderate Republicans, which were, I must say, pretty well done, walking in between, saying we don't know what's going to happen. It's simply an inquiry, trying to downplay it. And then I saw some of the polling, which was, again, I want to stress this can change. But I saw some of the polling that people were like, yeah, okay, yeah, it's okay to inquire. A great percentage of people. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that because this first hearing happened, that those same people that said it's okay to inquire, doesn't mean they won't change their mind and say, okay, you inquired, now what?
Yeah.
There is nothing. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think this was the firecracker start, obviously, to anything.
No, and I mean, they use doctored text messages. You got, Nancy Mace, saying that we know he did it. And you go, okay, prove it. And now she's got, she did a bizarre video. I don't know if you saw this, but she did one of those walking bizarre videos where evidently Joe Biden's in a prostitution ring. Somehow he's involved in a prostitution ring. I'm going, for a guy who's always sleeping, he sure gets a lot done.
In D.C., if you listen to the conspiracy theories, I don't think anybody in D.C. in the Capitol would be working. They'd all be on, some island or some room somewhere.
All orgies.
Exactly.
But I did want to ask you about something because you brought up about the Swiss bank account. Someone told me the other day, and again, I get this all the time, and we have this conversation every once in a while, about the lavish pensions and the lavish health care and all the stuff that members of Congress get. How long do you have to be in Congress to get a pension?
Well, you vest in 5 years. And let me answer the health care question. 6 years ago, December, I think it was the 30th, it'll be 7 years coming up, I had a heart attack.
Yeah.
That heart attack cost me $66,000 because I didn't have health care. So I'm going to be a walking testament to the fact that health care is not automatic. You have to be in the system. You have to have, bought it. You have to have a plan. I was 3 months short, unfortunately, of Medicare. Now, the whole deal about you get your salary, serve one term, you get your salary, your kids get this, your kids get that. Now, if you pass away in office, yes, your family will get the remainder of your term, will get the salary payment, and then you carry, insurance policies yourself. You need 5 years to vest, but you have to put into the system. And when people say, it's lavish. Now, in the good old days, years back, and somebody served 25 years, yes, they could come out with a fairly healthy pension. But now you put in to the pension, And if you served, say, 10 years, and you, based on your salary, and you put something in the pension, your payment out would be about, if you didn't take it early, $2,200 a month would be about what it would be if you put in a decade. Now, if you put in Strom Thurmond years, you know, and yeah, those pensions are going to be higher. In fact, if they would retire, they probably would get more, you know, in the long run. So it depends on how many years you have. Yeah. But the idea that you retire and you get your salary, that is absolutely not true.
Yeah, there's so much out there that's just crazy. But now I gotta get your thoughts on the shutdown. Evidently, it's coming. I still don't know why we're in this mess, but any thoughts?
Sure. We're in this mess because there are 20 people. I think 8 could be, you know, gotten to in the sense of cooperating with the speaker. But there are basically 20 people, 12 hardcore, and, of course, the ringleader, Matt Gaetz, who wants to do other things in his life, and, you know, he'll utilize this. But I think this core group of 12 to 14, 15 people are people who, at the end of the day, they don't care if the Republicans have the majority in Congress. They care either about themselves or they want to be in the minority because you don't have to govern.
Yeah.
You can just go crazy and complain all day and make up conspiracy theories. You don't have to govern. And if you look back at the Gingrich Clinton years, because I was part, you know, of that shutdown at that particular time, and Clinton did a veto, and Clinton blinked a little bit, and we blinked a little bit, and we had, you know, balanced budgets. But this is not that scenario. This has nothing to do with Joe Biden. Zero. Has nothing to do with the Senate. This is all Republican, internal war, and it's a circular firing squad that McCarthy has zero control over. And eventually, they're going to move to vacate his seat. And at some point in time, McCarthy is going to have to govern. And by governing, you got to reach out to the other side, throw out a bill. If half the Republicans like it, okay. If half the Democrats like it, okay. Otherwise, this is going to be a dysfunctional speakership from here all the way through. And, of course, Rick, and I'll end this rant by saying this. If they keep it up, the Democratic side has to just sit, have a mantra about working people and the economy, et cetera, and they will take the House back.
No, this is what I've been saying. Don't do anything to save them.
Don't do anything.
Give them just enough rope to hang themselves.
Well, and if they do save them, they're still going to vacate the seat and then go after him with the vengeance. McCarthy can't win. Oh, he'll probably get something temporarily, maybe, you know, for a few days, and then he'll pass all these outrageous bills, which I love doing, you know, the appropriations as you're supposed to, but they're going to be outrageous appropriation bills. And then you got one choice, up or down, because the Senate is not going to go along with it, probably including Republicans.
So last question, do we shut down tomorrow?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. There was no doubt in that.
Oh, yeah. Well, if as we speak, if they tonight at midnight, if they craft something, I don't think they can technically get it done into form. Plus, somebody will object to suspending the the reading or the rule, and that's where they got a problem. So they'll technically shut down. Now, if he can get a 3-day extension, then the extension starts Sunday. Nobody really is affected, but it will be a technical shutdown.
Oh boy. Again, as I've been saying, this is no way to run a lemonade stand. But, Bob, I appreciate
it.
What's that?
This may go on a while. Remember, it took 15 votes to get him in there.
Always the eternal optimist. I appreciate the time, and I hope you have a wonderful time in Kashmir. Good for you, and I look forward to hearing from you when you get
back. Okay.
Thanks so much, our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
I'm Rick Smith.
And this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1931. Canadian coal miners, their wives, and children marched through the streets of Estevan, Saskatchewan. The miners were on strike for union recognition and better pay and working conditions. Safety was a major concern for the 600 men and boys who worked in the mines. Water collected in many work areas. Too often, the mine companies failed to replace rotting timber, so roof cave-ins were frequent. Inadequate ventilation led to high concentrations of carbon dioxide. For braving this dangerous underground work, the miners earned only 25 cents for each ton of coal. The miners had joined the Mine Workers Union of Canada earlier that year. They called a strike in September, but coal mine operators refused to meet their demands. Miners and their families decided to demonstrate in the town of Estevan to gain community support. The mayor banned the demonstration and called upon the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to crush the march. The Mounties met several hundred miners and their families and attempted to block the procession. They opened fire on the unarmed crowd. Three striking miners were killed, and many others were wounded and arrested. Finally, on October 6th, the mine owners finally agreed to an 8-hour workday and a minimum wage of $4 a day. But they refused to recognize the union. It was not until the end of World War II that the United Mine Workers finally won recognition in the Saskatchewan coal fields. The strike remains a controversial event in Estevan. The three miners who were killed have the inscription "Murdered by RCMP" on their headstones. Over the years, locals have alternately erased and restored these inscriptions. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you, buddy? It helps when he's on air.
RFK is basically a crazy person who comes from political royalty in this country. You know, if his name's not Kennedy, nobody gives a damn what he thinks. But, you know, we give a great deal of deference to that family. I mean, there's an entire generation that's in love with them, a couple of generations, I would argue. So it is possible that somebody in America, you know, because of their love of the Kennedys, says that, you know, I'm going to cast a vote for Kennedy, not knowing just how crazy he is. I don't know whether that breaks for Joe Biden or for Trump. Who could say at this point? Because, you know, he said some things that might appeal to certain people on the left, and then also others on the right, you know. So, again, don't know where we stand with him. He's a wild card. I do know that given the likelihood of the small margins in certain swing states, you know, a third-party candidate could make a difference. Who's to say? That's the only concern I think a lot of us have with regard to someone like RFK. And then also, in terms of the shutdown, your guest pretty much nailed it. Yes, you know, McCarthy made a deal with the devil in order to get elected speaker on the 15th ballot. Let's not forget all the drama that transpired. You know, he and Matt Gaetz going back and forth, Marjorie Taylor Greene on the phone with Donald Trump, supposedly all of this back and forth. And okay, so he finally gets in, except this is a house that's built out of straw. Anything can tear it down. And these people came for their pound of flesh that they were promised by McCarthy, and now they want, you know, to exercise some kind of power. They realize that they have a disproportionate amount of power, these 20-odd people, as compared to anybody else in Congress, and they want to exercise that power. I think your guest is right. Most of them want just to move on to some crazy position in post their careers in the Congress in some conservative capacity. Who knows? A gig at Fox, or, you know, who knows, some other outlet, you know, some YouTube gig, who knows. But they just don't care. They have no sense of responsibility to the country and what this can do. A shutdown of the United States government affects the international economy, not just ours. And it's never come out well for the party that forced the shutdown. Every time that this has happened, you know, and Republicans have pushed us to this. Democrats don't do this. Democrats don't threaten to shut down the government and act like children. You know, and there's a question as to whether or not even it's even legal, but we'll set that aside for a moment. And you've got these people who are behaving like children who were threatening to shut down the government. And when after the shutdown, guess what? When it happened during Bill Clinton's administration, it benefited Bill Clinton. I don't know what they think they're going to get out of it, because they're not going to benefit their party. And, of course, Kevin McCarthy is torn, because he feels as if he doesn't give them what they want, he won't be speaker next week. If he does give them what they want, we're not going to get a deal. Government is going to shut down. And, of course, what then is your legacy other than, you know, you go down in history as one of the worst speakers that we've ever had. So where can he turn?
No, you're spot on. And look, I wished this for him. I wished heartburn and acid reflux, and I wished, you know, the crazy on him, because it's what he wanted, and he's getting every bit of it.
Yeah, there are certain jobs that you just shouldn't want. I don't know what sane person would want to be Speaker of the House in this environment, but he wanted it, as you said, and now he has it. And last point, you know, I don't make so much of what's going to happen with regard to Dianne Feinstein's seat. Yeah, only in that, you know, whoever is picked, I mean, you know, we're already in the fall. You know, by early 2024, you know, nothing is going to get done much in the Senate. You know, I mean, let's face it, we're into election season. People are worried about getting reelected. So there isn't much public policy that's going to get done anyway. So whoever he picks, I don't think they'll make much of a difference. They'll go down as a footnote in the history book, but it's not as if they're going to play a major role. So it's important in California politics and who's going to hold that position in terms of the election that's coming up for that position. But, you know, their capacity to impact any public policy coming up, minimal.
Yeah, I'm with you. Steve, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see where it all goes. And look, I don't want there to be a shutdown. There's nothing good in this other than, you know, as Steve pointed out, you know, never goes well for the people who do it. So maybe, you know, maybe Bob's right. Maybe Republicans want to be in the minority. Maybe there's some of them that want to be in the minority so that, well, they can just cause trouble. It's so much easier being in the minority. It's so much easier to be a bomb thrower than actually having an agenda and a policy position. We'll see. I got to finish with, and again, I am now going to say the words Taylor and Swift back to back for the, again, another time, because Fox News now. Fox News evidently upset that during the football game, that Taylor Swift went to watch her boyfriend play with his boyfriend's mother, with the boyfriend's mother. She evidently, you could see the lips move, and she used the F word, evidently. And Fox News, well, Fox News had a commentary for it, and well, yeah, here's Fox News.
Here you have Taylor Swift, probably just met Travis Kelce's mom for the first time. They're at the game last week, and she's going, let's effing go, front of her.
But Travis Kelce said that everybody in the booth that she was sitting in, his family, everybody said that she was so lovely.
Lovely, until, I'm sorry, if I heard that, and my son was dating a girl has a mouth like a Teamster, that's it. Either way, this couple is already more annoying.
No offense to the Teamsters.
I'm not going to go where what I think of that as an actual Teamster. I'm not going to go where my mind originally went. But what is this fascination with these two? Now, again, I've been enjoying watching the incel crowd attack Travis Kelce, you know, trying to make him a beta, which is their word for some. I don't even know the words, to be honest, but try to make him, you know, less than manly. He's dating Taylor Swift. The two of them are like the power. I guess this is the power couple now. And when they break up, I'm sure she'll write a song about him, and it'll be number one. And I'm sure he'll sell more merchandise. I don't get this fascination. I don't get it. I know he advocated for, you know, the COVID vaccine. I know that he did a spot for Bud Light. I get it. I know she registered voters. You know, what is it that the right has that would keep this at the front of their minds? Now, understand, this is what they discussed as there's an impeachment inquiry and a government shutdown. This is breaking news in the F world. And not just because she said the F word. Well, I guess it was, partially. Wow. Help us. Help us turn off the F channel. And turn on the Rick Smith Show. Grab our podcast, wherever you find your podcasts. Grab ours, share it, especially with people who...
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.